everyone. Thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight Black Voices. I'm Nick Blumberg. Brandis Friedman has the evening off. Here's what we're looking at.
Everything that is dope about America comes from Chicago.
Mayor Johnson faces off with Congress members as he defends the city's protections for undocumented immigrants.
We are close to reaching an agreement.
Chicago Teachers Union officials submit their final contract offer, one-on-one with Stacey Davis Gates. How a Southside businessman started the iconic black hair care brand Afrosheen.
The fashions are as diverse as the continent itself.
And the fashion of Africa takes center stage in a new exhibit at the Field Museum. First off tonight, Mayor Brandon Johnson found himself on a very hot seat this morning, called to defend Chicago's efforts to protect undocumented immigrants from deportation in front of the U.S. House Oversight Committee.
Every violent crime is devastating, but scapegoating entire communities is not only misleading, it is unjust and it is beneath us. Any actions that amplify fears of deportations make Chicago more dangerous.
Our Heather Sharone joins us now with more on the mayor's very high stakes and very long day. Heather, thanks for being here.
Happy to do it.
So the mayor appeared alongside his counterparts from New York, Boston, Denver, facing sharp questioning as expected about the city's welcoming city ordinance and if it stopped immigration agents from deporting criminals. Here's some of the first exchange Mayor Johnson had with Republican Representative James Comer of Kentucky, who chairs that committee.
Should that criminal be turned over to ICE?
With a criminal warrant, they are subject to the federal laws, and that includes deportation.
The point that we've got to iron out today is that we have to have cooperation.
So that came just minutes into today's six-hour hearing. Is it fair to say it set the tone for the day?
It did, because I think there was a lot of confusion among the Republican members of the committee about what exactly Chicago's welcoming city ordinance does. It does not prevent federal agents from coming to Chicago and deporting people who are here without permission. What it does do is prevent city officials from assisting that effort unless there is a judicial warrant. We heard the mayor say that time and time again, and I think several of the Republican members didn't quite know what to do that because, of course, this is sort of seen as sort of a blanket protection for undocumented immigrants, which they wrongly cast as all criminals when we know that most undocumented Chicagoans are just trying to live their lives. That really took a little bit out of the air in the hearing room, it appeared, because people really wanted sort of a viral moment with the mayor. It didn't come.
Well, despite plenty of Republican politicians taking shots at him, Johnson did have a few friendly faces, some Democrats on the panel. Was he able to use that to his advantage at all?
He did. There is nothing Brandon Johnson loves more than serving as Chicago's hype man. So he was able to proclaim Chicago the best freaking city in the world, and he was able to pay homage to our very own urban historian, Sherman Dilla Thomas, proclaiming that everything dope comes from Chicago. Pretty sure the first time that phrase has been entered into the congressional record.
Yeah, best freaking city in the world. We've heard that line a time or two.
Yes.
So as we've reported, the Justice Department suing Chicago over that welcoming city ordinance. Officials have even threatened to arrest Mayor Johnson if he doesn't aid in the Trump administration's efforts to deport millions of undocumented immigrants. Did anything that happened today have any bearing on those efforts?
Not really. There was a lot of worry among Johnson's supporters that he was going to do something to sort of put the city on its back foot in that litigation, which hasn't even really gotten started yet. Nothing really came up along those lines, although we did hear Florida Representative Anna Paulino Luna say she was going to make a criminal referral to the Department of Justice to investigate all four mayors for violating federal immigration law. That's the same allegation that the Department of Justice has already made and already investigating. It's not clear that that is really going to add to the city's legal woes. But I would imagine that after that six-hour hearing, Brandon Johnson is glad to be on his way back home.
I think a lot of us would be. Heather Sharone, thank you very much.
Thanks, Nick.
And you can read Heather's full story on our website. It's all at WTTW.com/news.
Chicago Tonight, Black Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
Chicago teachers union officials say a contract deal with Chicago Public Schools is close at hand after nearly a year of bargaining. Today, CTU members submitted to the district a petition for what they say are their five absolute must-haves signed by thousands of educators. CTU's deputy general counsel says the union has submitted its, quote, last, best, and final offer, which comes after more than 100 bargaining sessions between the union and the district. Joining us now with the latest is Stacey Davis Gates, president of the Chicago Teachers Union. Welcome back to Chicago Tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure. As we mentioned, you delivered what we said, thousands petition signatures, those five absolute must-haves: more educator prep time for elementary, smaller class sizes, boosting pay for veteran teachers, increasing staff like librarians, nurses, other supports, and ending that teacher evaluation system that a state report found is racially biased. You say you're close to landing a new contract. Where is there still a disconnect between the district and the union?
Well, that's why we took today to engage the Board of Education. We took our five sticking issues with the intense support from our membership, from communities from Edison Park to Beverly to Roseland, all the way up to Pilsen and Little Village. Our members are united. Our families are united. We had our contract negotiators there. We had our parents there. We talked about issues that are going to make school better for our young people. I do believe that the people at CPS want what's best for our young people. Same for Chicago Teachers Union. The CEO of CPS says we're close. I know we're close because I'm at the table. And so we can land this contract. The budget amendment that they put forth today tells me that they are ready to land this, and so we are looking forward to getting that done.
Yeah, for folks who aren't familiar with that, as you mentioned, the Board of Education put forward an amendment to its budget today. Can you briefly explain what that is and kind of what bearing that has on contract negotiations?
It's a little awkward. Typically, the budget amendment is put forth to the Board of Education after we land our contract. But this year, because the CEO did not budget for the pension payment, he did not budget for the principal's contract, and he did not budget for our contract, he basically submitted some incomplete work. And so now he's going backwards to figure out how to pay the pension payment and honor the workers in our school district.
And what did you see in that budget amendment? Does it look like it's the kind of financial wherewithal to meet some of the costs of this potential contract?
It does appear to have the financial wherewithal to meet the cost in this contract. We are encouraged by the number. And again, hopefully this gets us to the finish line. Look, our members are exhausted. We have Golden Apple Award winners at the table. We have Teachers of the Year at the table. These are people who are intensely dedicated to their students. They want to be back in the classroom with their students and not at the bargaining table. So they want a period at the end of this session. Our students deserve smaller class sizes, and that's what this contract will give them once settled.
As we mentioned, you called this the last, best, and final offer. Are there more bargaining sessions scheduled?
Well, we don't have any tomorrow. We are looking forward to landing the contract. We have offered a transformative vision in the form of a collective bargaining agreement that builds a force field around our school district. It honors the contributions and the diversity of our working staff by making sure we have Black teachers in the classroom. It gives young people a safer instructional experience in smaller classes. We expand the sports offerings. We provide more art and music and physical education teachers and more supports inside the classroom. That will help to further transform our district. This will be an historic agreement once landed.
Well, it's been a month or so since CTU rejected an independent fact finders report, kind of looking at the arguments both sides have put forward. Rejecting that report is a necessary step toward a strike. Is CTU considering a strike authorization vote?
We went into this project this time thinking about how might we, together with Chicago Public Schools, create an environment where we're giving our students what they deserve. And so that is our priority and has been our priority. The petition drive that we held The first 3 days told us that these five issues, small class size, veteran pay, those things are very important to our membership. They are willing to fight for them, and they would prefer to be honored and respected at the table and land this contract at the table. So today, we took the petitions. Today, we also heard a budget amendment that makes a bit of, you know, more sense than it's been making lately. These are the things that I believe will stop further messy fights and will land an historic agreement that I think all of us can be proud of.
Well, in addition to the contract negotiations, a lot going on the national scene that affects education as well. We saw Linda McMahon sworn in yesterday as Secretary of the U.S. Department of Education, seemingly with a mandate to dissolve that department, essentially. For folks who aren't familiar with the role the Education Department plays kind of in neighborhood schools, what sort of an impact could that have?
Well, it'll have a tremendous impact on the safety of our LGBTIAQ and trans students. Our Department of Education provides a force field of support, civil rights protections for those young people. Back when Arne Duncan was the CEO of our public schools, we were suspending kindergartners, a disproportionate amount of black students. The Civil Rights Division came to Chicago and said, time out, you can't do that anymore. We lose that type of guardrail. Title I funding, special education law, and the enforcement of that. That's why this contract is important. We've used our contract historically to create a system under which we hold the district accountable to give special education students their minutes, their resources, and their supports. We are doing that with this contract as well. And now it means even more because of the foolishness of the WWE running the DOE. You could not make up a worse horror story if you tried in this moment. That's why it's important to land this contract. We're going to need to have a district and a union relationship that is strong and protective. Black children, immigrant children, Latinx children, bilingual children, our special education children, I mentioned our trans children, they're going to need all of the support and protection that is necessary in this moment, and that requires collegiality and partnership.
Well, speaking of those protections for certain populations of students and parents, we recently saw ICE make an arrest outside of a school drop-off. Are you concerned we might see more targeting of undocumented students and families?
I am absolutely worried about that. Back in 2016, we began the process of bargaining sanctuary in our contract. We landed those protections in 2019. So when federal agents came to a Southside school, the entire staff had an understanding and a training that prevented further action. That's what we need the district for in this moment. We need to land those protections and create that force field.
All right. Well, much more to talk about in the coming days and weeks, I'm sure. But Stacey Davis-Gates, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Up next, Brandis Friedman and businessman George Johnson on the legacy of his iconic black hair care brand, Afrosheen.
For many black people, Afrosheen is a household name. After businessman George Johnson created the products in 1954, he continued breaking racial barriers to become one of the most successful black entrepreneurs in the country by the late 1960s. He's now telling the story of how he built his business from scratch in a new book called Afrosheen, How I Revolutionized an Industry with the Golden Rule from Soul Train to Wall Street. And joining us now are the book's co-authors. We are honored to have George Johnson, founder of Johnson Products Company, in studio, along with writer Hillary Beard. Thanks to you both for joining us, and congrats on the book. Mr. Johnson, I want to start with you first. What made you want to write this book now?
You sure you want to know?
I am sure.
Okay. I never intended to write a book. Never. I didn't like talking about myself. And every time I started talking about myself to my grandkids, tears would just flow. So I decided that I wasn't going to write a book. Friends asked me, and people who knew me asked me for 30 years, what am I going to tell my story? And I always told them I'm not going to do it because I don't like talking about myself. However, on November 21st, a Sunday morning, 2021, I was sitting in my family room, and all of a sudden, my room became occluded. I got warm. I tried to get up out of my chair. I couldn't get up out of my chair. And I clearly heard five words: "You must tell your story." And I believed it was the Lord telling me that I had to tell my story. It scared me to death. And I immediately changed my mind 180 degrees and decided to look for a professional writer.
And we know the rest is history, because we know that that clearly led you to Hillary Beard. But I want to back up into some of that story a little bit, because I imagine it was probably an emotional process for you if the tears were flowing when trying to express this to your kids. But you became a pioneer in the black hair care industry at a time when, of course, blacks are still facing all sorts of obstacles in this country, with segregation among them, chief among them. What led you to create those products at the time?
I got on the elevator on the fifth floor at Fuller Products Company, where I worked, and the elevator stopped on the third floor. Gentleman gets on, well-dressed, and I looked at him, and it blurted out of my mouth without thinking. I said, "What the hell is wrong with you?" And he told me that he came to Fuller Products because it was a black company, and that he needed some help, and he asked Mr. Fuller to make him a better product. But he's having trouble with the product he was using in his barbershop. His name was Orville Nelson, and he was owner of the House of Nelson. And Mr. Fuller told him that he was not interested in barber business, didn't have any time to be involved with it. He had too much of his own things going. And so I said to him, "I don't know what you're talking about, but I work in the lab. And if you have a card, give me your card. And I'll come by and see if I can do something for you." So I told him I'd help him. And that was the beginning of this of Johnson Products Company.
Okay. Hillary, you helped chronicle nearly, a century of history that is Mr. Johnson's life. What drew you to this project, and what was it like?
Well, I received a call out of nowhere, which I also viewed as a gift from God. There's an African proverb that says, when an elder dies, it's like a library burned down. And here was this very much alive 94-year-old elder who is incredibly accomplished, a trailblazer, a pioneer, with a library of stories that had not been documented, and also black history that has not been documented, and some of which has been actively suppressed. So I felt two responsibilities. One, he's 94, so we needed to move quickly to reflect, remember, catalog, and condense all these memories into a book quickly. And then secondly, we wanted to contextualize it in history so that today's leaders, visionaries, strivers, and entrepreneurs can understand the magnitude of his accomplishments within the history and the times within which they took place, which are eerily similar to what's happening now.
Mr. Johnson, in the book, it's included in the title how you revolutionized an industry with the Golden Rule, something that you have lived by. How has the Golden Rule, treating others as you would want to be treated, how has that guided your life?
It has made me what I am and what I've been. The Golden Rule is grounded in love, and trying to love people, you can't miss being, first of all, you help them, and they help you. I came upon that. I was taught that. I was taught that by Mr. Fuller. I worked for Mr. Fuller from the time I was 17 years old until I was 24. Well, actually, 24. And Mr. Fuller was a very devout man and a good businessman, and he lived by the Golden Rule. He was my mentor, and his encouragement, looking at what he did and what it did for him, I decided, that's how I'm going to try to live. And I tried to live it in my life and in my business.
Hillary, you know, when Afro-Sheen came onto the market, black hair care industry was not as big as it is today, which is a multi-billion dollar industry. And black people didn't have a lot of options with regards to their hair care. Was Mr. Johnson ahead of his time?
Mr. Johnson was a pioneer, and the creation of Ultra-Sheen Relaxer, which was the first product that allowed African-American women to permanently straighten their hair. It allowed them to access the mainstream labor market in ways that they had been unable to access before. So it was revolutionary in opening those opportunities up to black women at a time when we were excluded oftentimes from mainstream jobs and often not seen as human. In part because of the texture of our hair. He was a pioneer in terms of hiring people within the city of Chicago. He hired a diverse workforce before anybody did. He had a loving work environment. He offered above market wages to African Americans. He offered jobs to African Americans, to all people of color and women, from the factory floor to the C-suite before that was done. He offered profit sharing to everybody in the company way before that was an industry norm. He had health care benefits and on-site health care available, tuition reimbursement, maternity leave, benefits that people still want today. Mr. Johnson was offering in the 1960s and 70s.
What do you hope people take away from your life story?
Help one another.
All right. That is a good lesson. I think I'm going to have to leave it there. Congrats on the book to both of you. Thanks again for joining us, George Johnson and Hillary Beard. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Again, the book is called Afro-Sheen, How I Revolutionized an Industry with the Golden Rule from Soul Train to Wall Street. You can read an excerpt on our website. And we're back with more right after this.
A new exhibit at the Field Museum is celebrating Africa's layered history of fashion. It uses photography, video, fabrics, and more to showcase the work of artists from the start of the liberation period of the mid-20th century up until today. The exhibit, called Africa Fashion, was organized by the Victoria and Albert Museum in London and features creations from 22 African countries.
The continent itself is alive and thriving and beautiful, that the stereotypes are not present. You walk through this space and you're feeling pride in your culture if you're a part of that culture. And if you're not, you're just looking at beautiful things and looking at a culture of people that have created beautiful things, and not in a past tense way, that they're still creating beautiful things. So I love that feeling as you walk through this space, that it's alive and thriving. Africa is eons ahead of the United States when it comes to fashion. The silhouettes, the materials that are used, very different than what you'd find if we're walking through a store in Chicago, downtown Chicago.
When you come to see Africa Fashion, yes, you'll see amazing fashions in terms of outfits, but you also see a lot of photography because the show is about self-representation as well as self-fashioning. So if you think about the studio portraits that you'll find, those wonderful black and white studio portraits by the African photographers like Sanley Sore. So I think that this idea that fashion can, on the one hand, say something about yourself and be political, so it'll allow you to push against society's invisible borders. So there's that aspect. But then there's a whole host of people on the continent and in the global African diasporas that just relish the joy and the sensation of wearing wonderful clothes. Come back to the title of the show, because it's Africa Fashion for a reason. So the removal of the N, or the strategic refusal to put the N onto African, is because we wanted to keep as open-ended as possible. We wanted to mark the fact that the fashions are as diverse as the continent itself. And we recognize that all we could do with a show like this, even though it's a survey show, is to give audiences a glimpse. Through the show, we hope to tell a story that is about agency, about abundance, about unbounded creativity, and what I see as the magnificence of African creativity. And so within that, we want to tell a story that gives a kind of glimpse of the glamour and the politics of the African fashion scene.
The exhibit Africa Fashion is on display at the Field Museum through June 29th. And that's our show for this Wednesday night. You can stream Chicago Tonight on our WTTW YouTube channel every evening and catch up on any programs you may have missed. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. President Trump's new tariffs on Mexico, Canada, and China are in effect. We explore the impact on Illinois. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Nick Blumberg. Thank you for watching. Take care of yourselves and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to be a multilingual law firm that provides translators for a variety of languages.